and the once glorious voice crying in the wilderness that had gathered such an amazing following, they're all leaving and going to the bridegroom. And he's so happy. He is so happy.
What is it that filled John the Baptist with such joy towards the end of his short life? Where did his joy come from? That's the question John Piper answers from John 3, 22 to 30 in this episode of Light and Truth. This sermon was originally preached at Bethlehem Baptist Church on May 24th, 2009.
So Jesus is finished talking to Nicodemus. And the scene changes. And he is now in a Judean countryside, it says, baptizing with his band of men. Although, it says in verse 2 of chapter 4, Jesus himself did not baptize, but only his disciples. Presumably for a reason something like Paul's in Corinth, where he was very concerned that people would brag, I got the real deal. I got the real baptism from the main man. So I presume that's one of the reasons why he didn't do it himself. Verse 22. After this, Jesus and his disciples went into the Judean countryside, and he remained there with them and was baptizing. So part of the way Jesus is gathering a following is that his band would call for repentance and then would signify the purification from sins and the union with God in Christ by baptizing people, just like John the Baptist did. Then verse 23 says, here comes John the Baptist again. We hadn't seen him for a chapter, and now he's back. John the Baptist, verse 23, John also was baptizing at Enon near Salem because water was plentiful there and people were coming and being baptized, for John had not yet been put in prison. So the situation is set for us. One band of men is baptizing in one place, and another band of men is baptizing in another place. And this evidently triggers a dispute, a discussion. Verse 25. Now a discussion arose between some of John's disciples and a Jew over purification. So, something in the way this is happening has caused there to be a argument or a discussion about purification. That's all we're told. This debate or this discussion is never described. In fact, it just seems to vanish. Verse 26. And they came to John and said to him, Rabbi, he who was with you, this is Jesus he's talking about, he who is with you across the Jordan, to whom you bore witness, look, he's baptizing and all are going to him. That's not what we expected him to say. I mean, the issue is purification. What's the deal with purification? That's the debate set up in verse 25. And now, you're going to talk about this? And the answer seems to be no. Or is it? Here's my guess as to what the dispute or discussion was. Just because of the way he set it up in verse 22 and 23, one group baptizing, another group baptizing, then you got a little debate here about purification. So what might it be? I mean, there's no description of the debate, so I'm just going to guess, all right? Then you judge whether my guess seems plausible in the text. I think this Jewish man said to John's disciples, look, you're baptizing. Your group is baptizing, and lots of people are coming, and they're going down into that bath of purification, presumably, because they're coming out, and you're saying their sins are forgiven because they've repented and gone through this purification bath, and now lots of these followers of yours are going over to him, and he's baptizing too. So what's up? Something wrong with your baptism? It's not working? His works. Yours doesn't work. You got a purification issue here. I think probably something like that. That's just my best shot as to what the issue was here. Because they're all leaving John and going over to Jesus, and they're both baptizing, and so maybe that was the issue. We're not told. In fact, the issue never comes up again. The word never comes up again in the gospel. Or does it? We'll have to wait and see. What does come up in verse 27 to 30 is that John the Baptist takes this conversation in a totally unexpected direction. And so we're going to follow him. Seems to have nothing to do with purification, but has everything to do with Jesus. He's going to be the bridegroom. Has everything to do with John. He's the friend of the bridegroom. Has everything to do with what's happening. They're leaving him and going to the bridegroom. And it has everything to do with John's response to this. He's incredibly happy. So that's what this text is about. Who is Jesus, the bridegroom? Who's John, the friend? What's happening? Everybody's leaving John, going to Jesus. How does he feel about it? Thrilled. That's this text. Where's purification in that? Now, here's my question. When I try to get inside this and say, okay, what is going on here? We just read Nicodemus, new birth, wind blows where it wills, people come because they want it to be seen that all their deeds have been wrought in God, end of Nicodemus' story, out in the countryside, baptismal conflict, he's like a bridegroom, and you say, where did this come from? And here's the reason you ask questions like that. Do you remember what it says over near the end of the gospel about how many things John, the writer of this gospel, could be saying right now that he's not saying? Let me read you verse 25 of chapter 21. Now there are also many other things that Jesus did. Were every one of them to be written, I suppose that the world itself could not contain the books, which means John's being really selective. So why this here? That's the way I think about these selections. Why here? He could have jumped months forward. He could have gone right thing next, but he went straight to this countryside, this baptismal thing, this conflict about purification, and these words out of John. I mean, I didn't expect John to show up again. John has had his say in this gospel. It's been a powerful one. We've heard John already say virtually the same kind of things that are here. Verse 28 of chapter 1, I'm not the Christ. Verse 29, I'm not the prophet. I'm not the one who is worthy to tie his shoes. So John has already had his say. Why here have him say in verse 28? Look at verse 28. I'm not the Christ. Verse 29, I'm not the bridegroom. I'm only the friend of the bridegroom. Verse 30, he must increase, I must decrease. We've heard all this before. So why is he brought in here again? And let me make a stab at what I think is going on. I don't think John merely repeats himself here. I think he is saying some new things, and he is revealing some new emotions about those new things. We didn't get the same glimpse into John's heart that we're going to get here, especially in verse 29, about this man's soul and this man's heart. I think John is brought in here, this little story, this little interaction, and these words coming out of his mouth are brought in right here to show this is the way you respond, not like Nicodemus. This is the kind of response when you hear sovereignty talk like the wind blows where it wills, and so are those who are born of the Spirit, and those who do the truth come, that it may be seen that their deeds have been wrought in them by God, that sovereignty talk. And Nicodemus is just totally flabbergasted, and that's over. And here comes John the Baptist. And I'm going to show you some links with what's gone before. He's not just brought in here to kind of say over again what you said in chapter 1, and then we'll let you go. That's not the case. There are things that he says here and emotions that he reveals here that are spectacular. Let's read verse 29. The friend, that's John, of the bridegroom, that's Jesus, who stands and hears him, rejoices greatly at the bridegroom's voice. Therefore, this joy of mine is now complete. Those are strong words. I've got great joy and I've got complete joy. We didn't hear anything like this coming out of John's mouth before. And what's making him so happy? Everybody's leaving him. The bridegroom's getting all the attention. The cameras are flashing in that direction, not the friends. The rice is all flying over the sidewalk as the couple dashes away. The honeymoon is all in that direction, and nobody is glancing back on the steps of the church where the voice crying in the wilderness is now silent. John's life is a joyful tragedy. My joy is now complete. In just a few months, a sword will sever his glorious head at the whim of a dancing girl. For John, joy resided precisely in going down while Jesus went up, decreasing while Jesus increased, disappearing while the honeymoon and the rice and the cameras all went that way. And the once glorious voice crying in the wilderness that had gathered such an amazing following, they're all leaving and go into the bridegroom. And he's so happy. He is so happy. That's new. That's for us. For me. Nicodemus didn't respond like this. And many today don't respond to Jesus' summons that he be exalted and we be humble. This is not the basis of the joy of hardly anybody. Just radical Christians to whom something has happened called the new birth, which has so reoriented their joy-producing nerves that they're now rooted in the opposite of what they were once rooted in. Like, give me a gathering. Give me an audience. Give me some praise. Give me some commendation and I'll be happy. I love approval. And then you get born again. And you're not the center anymore. He's the center. Tuesday, May 13, NPR, Fresh Air, right? Terry Gross interviewing the author of An American Gospel. Goes to a page in his book and says, I'd like you to comment on something you wrote. Would you read this text? And he reads these words, Matthew 10, 37, 38. He read more, but this is the core of it. You can punch the button and watch this and listen to this for yourself. Start at minute number 9, okay? Whoever loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. It's Jesus talking. Whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And whoever does not take his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. And she said, you wrote, who is this egomaniac speaking these words? You want to comment on that? And he said, it sounds egomaniacal to me. So you see, Nicodemus was simply baffled that he would be utterly, totally dependent on the blowing of the wind to cause him to be born again, that his coming to Jesus would be a coming motivated by a desire to make it clearly seen that everything bringing him there had been worked by God. He was just baffled. Not John the Baptist. Not John the Baptist. He's not baffled. He's thrilled. We live in a very increasingly not non-Christian, but anti-Christian culture. Your Jesus is an egomaniac. This is not a misunderstanding of what Jesus said. You must love me more than you love them. You must follow me more than you follow them. You must obey me and nobody else. I am absolute authority. That's egomaniacal. In the world's eyes. So, John the Baptist just strikes me as a very strange fellow. I must go down, he must go up, and in this, my joy is complete. Not, I must go down, he must go up, so he is one big-headed monomaniac. Something's wrong with John the Baptist, or something's wrong with the world. Clearly, Jesus demands that we treasure him over everything. People who respond that way find John the Baptist's response unintelligible. It's the opposite of their own. John the Baptist says, verse 29, end of the verse. Just make sure you see it with your own eyes. End of verse 29. Therefore, this joy of mine is now complete. He must increase. I must decrease. When Jesus becomes greater in the world and I become lesser in the world, my joy goes up. And when this is the purpose of God and the purpose of Jesus, that Jesus go up and God go up and we go down in humility, this is not egomania, this is love. This is called love. So my answer to why John the Baptist is brought in right here is to illustrate a joyful response to the radical things Jesus has been saying to Nicodemus that Nicodemus didn't have a clue how to respond to or didn't understand the sovereign work of God in salvation. You could call it a joyful response to God's sovereign self-exaltation. A joyful response to God's sovereign self-exaltation.
This is Light and Truth, God-centered preaching to help you see Christ clearly and treasure Him truly. I'm your host, Dan Kruver. Thank you for listening. On our next episode, John Piper continues our series, Behold the Glory of Jesus, with a sermon titled, All Are Going to Him. I hope you'll join us. For more resources, visit desiringgod.org.